KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Sam Amadon, Sunday, September 24th at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Sam Amadon is a singer and multi-instrumentalist who is known for his adventurous folk pop style. His latest album is a collection of self-penned songs that bring his folk style together with jazz improv. Again, that's Sam Amadon, Sunday, September 24th at 8 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, asking you to support Community Radio KBOO Portland right now by calling 877-500-5266. That number again is 877-500-5266. Thanks very much. This is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Cynthia Kaufman on capitalism, getting past it. The present phase of capitalism is a great success story for the uber-rich. Torrents of wealth flow overwhelmingly to a sliver of the population. Millennials in large numbers are seriously questioning the existing economic order. They are even willing to, hold your breath, consider a socialist alternative. The Bernie Sanders campaign made a huge impact on many young people and sparked interest in socialism. When millennials hear the term capitalism, they think about Wall Street bailouts, corporate greed, offshore accounts, and a tax code riddled with loopholes for the well-connected. The vaunted invisible hand feels like a death grip for far too many. Now is the time to think outside the box. As George Monbiot writes in The Guardian, it's not enough to oppose a broken system. A coherent alternative has to be proposed. Our guest today is Cynthia Kaufman. She's the director of the Institute of Community and Civic Engagement at De Anza College in San Francisco, where she also teaches philosophy. She's the author of Getting Past Capitalism. She spoke in Fresno, California. And now, Cynthia Kaufman.
With the election of Trump as president, the Republican majority in both houses, and a scary balance on the Supreme Court, we are in such a hard time that it almost doesn't seem right to be talking about moving forward and getting past capitalism. Right now, I think it seems as though preventing fascism is perhaps the most we can hope for. And yet, I think it is important that we hold on to our larger vision of a better world, even as we engage in a lot of defensive battles. One reason for this is it can help orient us in doing our defensive work to remember what we're fighting for and to be inspired by our belief that another world is possible. In 1994, when the Zapatistas came out of the jungle opposing the North American Free Trade Agreement and declaring really boldly that another world is possible, I saw how important it was actually to dream of a better world, even in hard times, and to have a sense of the direction we want society to move in, even when we don't think we're going to get there anytime soon. That sense of hope and vision helps us to be inspiring to others and to pull them into our movements. And it also helps us decide which things to work on and which are the most important negative things to challenge. I see something helpful in the utopian work also of those who are building alternative economies in the present time. While we won't stop capitalism merely by building worker-owned cooperatives or going to farmers' markets, there's something important in starting right here and right now to build the better world that so many of us desire. And I'm going to come back to some ideas about that later in the talk. The other reason why I think it's important in these really hard times to talk about getting past capitalism is that in the United States, as in many other countries, the neoliberal consensus that supported a slightly benign form of capitalism has been shattered. And that presents incredible opportunities for those of us who want to get past capitalism that I hadn't been able to imagine a couple years ago. We can see this in Europe as well as in the United States, where the old political parties have totally lost credibility because of their inability to protect people's standards of living from rising inequality and a dominance of our lives by the banks and the hedge funds. We're at a crossroads in many places in the world right now. Hillary Clinton's loss was importantly a loss about the inability of her particular brand of neoliberal capitalism to inspire people enough to come out and vote for her. That presents an opportunity for those of us who oppose capitalism to build support for our vision of a better world. Before returning to talk later some more about the electoral situation we're in this country, I want to digress a little bit and talk about capitalism and why we need to get past it. I believe that capitalism rewards greed and fosters a society in which it is hard for people to pay good, productive attention to the needs of others and to the way that we are all interconnected. But I also realize that many people see it as the only viable form of society in the modern world. Wondering about capitalism has pushed me to think a lot about what other kinds of economic and political systems might be possible. Although I'm opposed to capitalism, I'm not opposed to all uses of market mechanisms, to trade, or to entrepreneurship. Each of those things can play a positive role in an economy under the right circumstances. But investment for profit becomes a problem when profit-making consumes such a significant part of society's resources that investors gain the power to transform our cultural and political systems. When capitalists control a political system, other ways of living and using resources are drowned out. Capitalism is a problem because it allows those with resources to use them without regard to the needs of others. That disregard leads to a destruction of communities, to millions of people around the world not having access to the basic things they need to live healthy lives, and to environmental degradation. Capitalism is one of the most important forces responsible for the fact that most people don't have time to do the things that they love. Along with racism and sexism, capitalism is a powerful force for generating and maintaining devastating forms of inequality. It is largely to blame for the slow response to the global catastrophe being caused by climate change. But how do we undo capitalism, a system that has been developing and growing for more than 500 years? By this point, capitalism has become a central part of the fabric of most societies that we inhabit. How do we dismantle the capitalist home we live in when our activities every day effectively shore it up? No matter how anti-capitalist you are, if you live in a society dominated by capitalism, you probably need to work for a wage. Most of us spend many of our waking hours doing paid work and much of our leisure time shopping and otherwise consuming capitalist culture. Capitalism even structures our intimate relationships. We often express love by buying things for people, and we often judge people based on the products that they use. When capitalism comes to dominate society, when all other ways of meeting our needs come to be devalued and pushed out, when governments operate to serve the interests of privately owned capital rather than the needs of people, we have a serious problem, and we should name that problem as capitalism. I decided to write my book, Getting Past Capitalism, History, Vision, Hope, to help social justice activists like myself, and I actually, for myself, writing the book was really clarifying for things that I had been deeply confused about. Who see capitalism as a problem, to be able to have a sense of realistic ways forward to act on our anti-capitalism, even in times when the revolution is not looming. Important to that vision of practical anti-capitalism is the idea that there are many alternatives to capitalism that we live in right now, that capitalism is not our whole society, but rather a nasty set of practices that are parasitic upon a whole functioning fabric of social relations that work well and that need to be expanded. To me, it's exciting to think that there are realistic alternatives to capitalism, that we thrive in many of those alternatives right now, that society can be transformed to the extent that those alternatives can become stronger and more predominant in our lives. We can begin to think of fighting capitalism as we think of fighting a fungus or a virus that has damaged our body politic. It has become entangled with our cells and needs to be fought from within and from without with complementary treatments. If we can see capitalism as a set of interrelated practices, we can also see its connections for what they are and not overstate the extent to which they are fused together in a system. We need to develop ways of conceptualizing capitalism that render it solid enough for patterns to be revealed and yet open enough to see the places where it is vulnerable. Metaphors and images are central to the ways we understand and use concepts, and if our common metaphors and images fail to reflect our reality, our thoughts can be structured in ways that don't serve us well. Capitalism is reinforced by the image of a market functioning beautifully by means of an imaginary hand, effortlessly allocating resources where they need to go. It is helped by powerful confusion in people's minds between freedom and democracy in the world of politics and the freedoms of markets and corporations. Instead of an image of a world composed of rational, competitive individuals, each fighting to get as many resources for him or herself as possible, we need to develop an image of society as a tapestry of people and all of nature interlinked in a common fate. Imagine our different languages and cultures as a variety of patterns that reveal common as well as unique solutions to the problems of being human. Think of capitalism as a fungus that has dulled the colors of the tapestry and weakened its fibers. Only by diligently cleaning every strand and warp and woof of every embroidery stitch that is implicated in capitalist processes can we create a human tapestry with greater beauty and brilliance. Think of pulling capitalist elements from the social fabric and replacing them with other social forms. The pulling, cutting, and reweaving must happen at many social locations, from the land and rivers where food and water is drawn each year to laboratories where new treatments for disease are developed. Pulling threads in one place often causes holes in other places, and as we reweave society, we need to attend to the short-term problems that our actions can take. We need to create a better world while still inhabiting the fabric of the one we want to challenge. This image of reweaving a tapestry is intended to bring to mind the idea of a constant remaking of the intricate nature of capitalist processes and of the ways that change on a macro scale is made up of changes on a micro scale. We are constantly making and remaking society every day in all of our human interactions.
KBOO Portland. Hi, I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here with...
Ray Bodwell. Teresa,
and
how are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be doing my part. I got up this morning, and honest to God, I said, "Argh, must crush capitalism," just to encourage myself. And I'm so glad I'm able to come here to KBOO Radio, where you can hear something like this, and we can talk about capitalism and how we're overwhelmed by it. I see the problem as we are immersed by capitalism, just as the speaker was saying. We're crushed and overwhelmed by capitalism, but we need to give this society a KBOO injection. We need to kick the minimum wage economy in the teeth with some defiance and some knowledge and some attitude, and that attitude is so important. And the way I spell hope isn't H-O-P-E, it's K-B-O-O, and I know you feel the same, and this sort of information and this sort of attitude washes over you like cool water when you need it. So I need you to take action, you, to take action right now, not to give up, not to let capitalism crush you, but to stand with everyone else who is rising up and saying, you know what, we're tired of this. We can think of a better way to be. We can think of a better solution and a better future for ourselves than destroying the planet and wiping out our own economy and continuing to crush each other with this hopelessly maldistributed wealth paradigm that we have all around us. We have KBOO Radio, and we stand together. And so I'm asking you to call 877-500-5266 and take a stand for yourself and for your kids and for everyone that you care about and about this new society, for this new society that we are going to build, that we are building. I've been trying this. I've been doing my thing here at KBOO like so many others here for decades, and we are not going to give up, and we are still here and we're still standing strong. We need you to call right now, 877-500-5266, and get yourself a hoodie. And I think that this is a good time to describe that hoodie.
Well, it's a gorgeous hoodie with the KBOO star in the front, and the new version has the KBOO star on the back.
Oh,
indeed.
I didn't
so
know that.
Yes, or at least that's what I've been told. I haven't turned it around and looked at it yet, but this is a great opportunity for you to show your commitment and also display your commitment to your community members. For just $25 a month, you can receive the KBOO hoodie.
That's the only way you can get it too.
That's right, and you know it's interesting to. Teresa, since 1986, alternative radio has been on the air, and that's almost as long as KBOO, but not quite. And that's why we need to take this opportunity to ask you, our listeners, to help us continue into the future. Take this opportunity. Please give us a call, 877-500-5266. I'm going to repeat that one more time, 877-500-5266. You can donate online if you'd prefer. That's kboo.fm, and hit the donate button. Or if you're on your smartphone or iPad, you can just go to the start screen and hit the donate button there. But no matter what course you choose, please take this opportunity to show your support for KBOO.
Yeah, stop your kvetching, Gretchen. Grab a cobblestone and get right up to the barricades. Things are happening. And KBOO is right there reporting on it, making it happen, giving you the attitude and the information that you need to move forward with revolution. We need you. You need us. This is the time. Can you feel it? Can you feel it in your heart? Do you have the shoulders? Do you have, well, of course, you need a steady job, too, or you need some source of income, you know, and if you don't have a source of income, don't feel bad about not contributing, because we are here for you. We understand that not everyone can donate, therefore not everyone should donate. And I almost said donut, because I like donuts, and we get food here. We get wonderful food here anyway. But it's a two-week party in a sense. But it's also a big struggle, and we need to hear that phone ring. I know that you are donating right now at KBOO.FM, and that's great. And I'm so grateful for that. But it's wonderful. If you're anywhere in the continental United States, you can call 877-500-5266. That's 877-toll-free, 500-5266 spells KBOO, 877-500-5266. Now, this has to be you. You know it has to be you, because you're the person who always does that little bit extra, aren't you? You're the person who went and cleaned the drain before the big storm. You're the person who understands that you're a member of society, and you want to be a member of society, and you want us to go to a better place. It's up to you. You have to be the person calling. And what's that number?
That number is 877-500-5266. I'm going to say it again, 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm. Remember, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. Community is our middle name, and you are part of that community. So please take this opportunity, call, and help us hit our goal this hour of $400. Please, 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. And now back to Cynthia.
For many years, I've listened carefully to how people who see capitalism as a problem talk about it in their political work. Usually, it's spoken of as a limit. They suggest that we can only do so much to change a situation, but once the problem we're dealing with goes up against capitalism, we should probably give up. Capitalism, after all, is simply our condition. There is nothing short of world revolution that will make that condition change. Opponents to capitalism are long on critiques and very short on positive steps for doing anything about it. Many people doing important political work might characterize their work as only reformist. Seeing no alternative to capitalism, they soldier on, doing what they know needs to be done. But imagine the excitement and inspiration they might gain if they could see their efforts as part of a long-term project of getting rid of capitalism. How we think about the nature of capitalism has huge implications for how we are to think about anti-capitalism. If we accept the picture of capitalism as a robust, adaptable system that can create every sort of social effect it needs to keep itself functioning, then it's likely that we'll see schools, for example, as nothing more than factories for the production of workers, governments as nothing more than agents of the ruling class, household labor as something created by the capitalists for the reproduction of the workforce. Within this view, the agent called capitalism makes these things happen to keep itself functioning and co-opts or destroys every effort made to challenge this. Capitalism comes to be like the Terminator, destroying all in its path and powerful in its ability to fight off challengers, changing form and shape when needed, and always intent on its goal of destroying human resistance. Even more powerful than the Terminator, capitalism is seen as having such a high level of cunning that only its own internally created crisis point will make it vulnerable enough for it to ever be destroyed. And there are good reasons why people who oppose capitalism are inclined to see it as a totalistic system. I think it's a helpful antidote to a kind of thinking which is endemic to capitalist society, where people don't see the connections between social processes. Karl Marx's critique of capitalism remains unparalleled in its insight into the ways that capitalism operates and the problems that it causes. And yet many within the Marxist tradition have relied on ways of analyzing the problem that make it difficult to imagine realistic approaches to anti-capitalist politics. How can we separate those totalizing threads from our tapestry and envision more promising ways to challenge capitalism? There is a tradition on the left of dismissing as reformist any action not specifically designed to instigate a revolution to smash the state and overthrow capitalism. Early theorists of capitalism believed that the only two options were violent revolution to overthrow capitalism or reformism that made life a little bit better but accepted capitalism as a given. Ideas of revolution have focused on taking state power or overthrowing a government as the only path to a world beyond capitalism. But when we ask strategic questions about what aspects of capitalism might need to be challenged first, it's not at all clear that taking state power should be the first or even an early aspect of an anti-capitalist movement. You can overthrow a group of people who are governing a political system, and those who take power can expropriate some or all of the economic resources held by the owning class. But when this has been done in the past, the very processes of holding state power and defending anti-capitalist changes has led to social and political clampdown, as occurred in most of the governments that call themselves anti-capitalist, like the Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union, Stalinist repression inhibited the very deep transformation of other aspects of society that had actually begun when the revolution first started. The idea of revolution encourages us to focus on governments and to forget the non-dramatic, slow building and reweaving that goes beyond state power. The image of revolution as a dramatic moment of overthrow also encourages us to suppose that at some point when you do anti-capitalist work, you're done. Our historical experience of anti-capitalist struggle has shown that the work of getting past capitalism has never reached a final point in any geographic locality. Wherever there has been an anti-capitalist revolution, forces attempting to reinstate capitalism have in every instance persisted in attempting to subvert anti-capitalist gains. Even if capitalism were someday reduced to almost nothing, it would seem wise to be continually on the lookout for new accumulations of power based on private appropriation of public goods, which I think is one of the core ways to understand what capitalism is. If capitalism were a structure like a building, it might make sense to focus on taking it down by overthrowing it. But if it's deeply woven into the social fabric, then overthrow isn't the right metaphor to use to understand how to destroy it. We need instead to untie the knots that bind us to it. We need to reweave the social fabric in ways that don't rely on it, that are resistant to it. We need to develop ways of thinking that are about what we were doing that value the slow process of transforming every aspect of our society, what Rudy Dutschke in 1968 called the long, slow march through the institutions, which don't rely on some future grand moment of contestation. We need to develop ways of thinking about anti-capitalism that foster vigilance against the undermining and destruction of the good things that we create. The idea of revolution is a powerful, inspirational image if it conjures up in our minds the idea that capitalism needs to be completely eliminated. The idea of revolution can inspire us to imagine an outside to capitalist relations. It can mean that another world is possible. But revolution also needs to be understood as a complex, multifaceted, never-ending process that takes place at all social levels.
And welcome back to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. I'm Ray, and I'm here with Teresa. And we want to thank you for listening in to Cynthia Kaufman as she discusses yet more pitfalls of capitalism. Commercial TV and radio don't answer to their viewers. They answer to stockholders and advertisers. At KBOO, however, we answer to you, the listener. And with that in mind, we want to ask you to take a moment and show your support for the station, and please give us a call during this membership drive. Become a member now and be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing gets you an experience you can share with your friends. You'll win a private party gift certificate for 10 people from Eastside Distilling in Portland. We're offering a new prize every day of the drive, so call 877-500-5266 now and be entered for a chance to win. Or you can go to kboo.fm for rules and restrictions.
You know, we've been around for a long time. Abby Hoffman has been here personally. Abby Hoffman has come into these halls, and we still have a recording of him somewhere, I'm pretty sure, of saying, "I'm Abby Hoffman, and when I am in Portland, I listen to KBOO," which is great. And another thing that Abby Hoffman used to say is sometimes it's time to shout theater in a crowded fire. And we also remember that the Lesbian Avengers were here, and who remembers the Lesbian Avengers? Well, they're still here. There's Lesbian Avengers around here, I'll have you know. And they say, "Be the bomb you throw. Be the bomb you throw." What are you doing for real social change right now? Well, a lot of you are doing a lot, but it's very important to support your community radio station, that hub that radiates in and out and back and forth and creates social change, because we do it all together. It's just us doing this. We're not depending on government funds, and we don't even take corporate funds. And we know that at the base, the thing that keeps us real is getting that donation from you during the membership drive. So this means that you need to call 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266 for $10 a month. You can get a USB drive of exclusive audio from KBOO, and I'll let Ray tell you more about that.
Teresa, it's amazing. With nearly a 50-year of archives, we have people like Ken Kesey, W.E.B. Du Bois, Daniel Berrigan, Dick Gregory, and on and on and on. Stokely Carmichael.
Troublemakers.
Yes, bomb throwers, people we love. And to get this thumb drive, you can achieve, you can capture it with just a $10 a month sustaining membership. You can get that by going to kboo.fm and clicking donate, or going to 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or go to your iPad or smartphone app and click on donate. And now back to Cynthia Kaufman.
Organizing to get past capitalism involves understanding the social patterns that make capitalism happen. In the book, I argue that the means by which capitalism is perpetuated can be grouped into four main forms of agency. Okay, now I'm going to start getting a little more specific. Systems of desire and meaning among the general population, that's one. Different ways that the owning class comes together to act as an agent, the state or the government, and a problem that I call the economic dependency trap of capitalism. As capitalism has developed, each of these forms of agency has evolved in ways that expand the degree to which capitalism has come to work as a dominant set of threads holding together and reproducing patterns in our social lives. So now I want to explain each of these forms of agency in a little bit of detail. Okay, so number one, systems of desire and meaning. Marx's concept of ideology is a good first approximation at describing the way systems of ideas help to reproduce capitalism. In one of his most famous phrases for describing ideology, Marx writes that, quote, the ideas of the ruling class are in every epoch the ruling ideas, unquote. The owning class, or as Marx says here, the ruling class, is able to influence the ways people think about the world through its impact on schools, the media, religion, artistic production, etc. Through ideological processes, owning class ways of looking at the world and ways of understanding the world that favor the owning class come to have powerful effects on the systems of ideas in any society. But the concept of ideology can be overly simplistic if ideology means that all of the dominant ideas of society will be the ideas of the ruling class. From this functionalist perspective, it's hard to see how we challenge capitalist ideology. We can come to feel powerless in the face of a ruling class that always gets its way. Capitalist ways of being in the world structure our lives at a much deeper level than the concept of ideology expresses. Ideology does not simply overlay a set of beliefs onto an otherwise blank slate, as if our views had nothing to do with when and how we were raised and the cultures we inhabit. As such, we need concepts that acknowledge how capitalist ideas are not spread homogeneously across the social fabric. We need to look at the complex ways that they are woven into our human experience in much of the world. Living in a society dominated by capitalism, we inhabit a world where pleasure is increasingly structured as something to be bought. Fulfillment is conceived as something to be attained through the consumption of commodities. If we don't make conscious choices or have a clear sense of our options, we can reproduce capitalist ways of being in the world for ourselves and for others by following the expected ways of being. These practices then become memes or self-produced reproducing practices. Understanding the cultural memes that support capitalism will help open the way for imagining how to get past capitalism. Capitalism is built on John Locke's meme of people as fundamentally separate from one another and individual at our core. It is built on the meme of fusing capitalism with democracy in our imaginations. It relies on the meme of magical but delicate market forces conjuring up wealth but whose functioning is so fragile that any tinkering will destroy the magic of the market. Another meme is the shadow image of the only alternative to capitalism as a police state in which people have no control over their lives and where everyone is poor and no one has any motivation to better themselves. In the US, one of the most prevalent pro-capitalist memes is that of upward mobility. Deep in our culture are beliefs that anyone can make it if they try, and working for a wage is morally righteous, and those who have not made it are lazy, immoral, or simply happy being poor. Making it in this society comes to be defined in terms of wealth, and the trappings of wealth are taken as the signs of a good life. Not surprisingly, theorists have found across many different societies that above an income level of about $10,000 per year, there is absolutely no correlation between happiness and wealth. The strongest correlates of happiness are health and a sense of connection to others. Yet the belief that happiness comes from wealth is so deeply embedded in our culture that many people, when they look into their hearts and ask what they want from life, find that what they want is material wealth, fame, and beauty. which all can be bought, right? Much of the work of replicating capitalism occurs through memes that are deeply embedded in our social forms that are not necessarily the result of the action of individuals working consciously to promote capitalism. No one needs to figure out how to promote consumerism as a way of life for it to be perpetuated ever more deeply into our social fabric. Each capitalist firm pursuing its own self-interest will look for ways to sell its product. Commercial media, which survive in advertising, create a welcoming space for those messages. Individuals who live in an environment saturated with such messages and with little free time to pursue other ways of being come to desire consumption as a way of living, and therefore they end up reproducing capitalism through the ways that they actually live out their desires that they find themselves having. The second thing I want to talk about is the owning class. Those viral forms of agency that perpetuate capitalism through consumer culture are often supplemented, especially in times of crisis, by intentional forms of agency on the part of the owning class. Where there are movements that threaten the powers and privileges of the owning class, that class often comes together as an intentional agent to fight back. The owning class often functions as what Marx called a class for itself, that is, a class which knows its interests and operates effectively and often with brutality and violence to protect those interests. As sociologist William Robinson has argued, there is a transnational capitalist class still in the process of development that works to create optimal conditions for transnational forms of capitalism. The nation-state came into being over the past few hundred years while capitalism was also coming into being. As such, ways of serving the needs of capitalism have become deeply embedded in the form and functioning of nation-states. As transnational capitalism is developing, a set of transnational institutions to support it is also starting to develop. Robinson argues that this transnational state is not so much displacing nation states as it is linking them together under the predominance of transnational institutions such as the European Union, NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, and those annual meetings that the very wealthy have in Davos, Switzerland every year. The owning class works quite intentionally to create conditions for the functioning of capitalism as a whole, for the success of their specific businesses, and for the interests of the owning class as a class. As such, it is one of the main forms of agency that operates to reproduce capitalism. This owning class operates through its business practices, through setting up think tanks to perpetuate its ideas, through control over media, through pushing for specific forms of legislation at every level of government, and at the transnational level, these forces fight for institutions such as the World Trade Organization. At the national level, they work together for particular labor laws, tax policies, and trade agreements. At the local level, they make sure that developers are favored in planning processes, the owning class has many powerful tools at its disposal. And one of its most powerful tools is that it can influence governments, referred to in political theory as states, that then define themselves and become other agents of capitalism. So the third form of agency I want to talk about that reproduces capitalism is the state. One of the oddest things about capitalism is that it is often thought of as if it were an independent set of practices having nothing to do with government. Markets are imagined to be completely autonomous and self-replicating. Governments are seen as prone to meddle with capitalism that does better when it operates on its own. And yet, in many ways, the state is a necessary twin of a capitalist economy. Capitalism arose at the same time as parliamentary democracy in Europe. Many members of the owning class advocated for parliamentary democracy in the early days of capitalism as a way to challenge the forms of authority and governmental structures that existed under feudalism. In doing this, they created a political space for their own rise to power. But this alliance between capitalists and advocates of democracy has always proven to be quite unstable. From the beginning, the democratic governments that emerged out of the European Enlightenment were, on the one hand, mechanisms for people to be able to express their desires and interests, and on the other hand, mechanisms for the protection of the conditions required for a capitalist economy to function. An important part of capitalism from its very beginning has been the use of violence to protect the conditions necessary for resource extraction, to thwart the militancy of labor, to control and empower undocumented immigrants, and to get surplus populations, so-called, off the streets with mass incarceration. Governments have been dependable in their ability to mobilize violence to serve the needs of the owning class. And the fourth and final form of agency that I want to talk about is the economic dependency trap of capitalism. Working class people in a capitalist society need a wage to get the money they need to get the resources they need to survive. In many places in the world, capitalism operates according to a basic compromise. The workers will fight with capitalists over how much of the surplus will go to the workers and how much will go to the owners, and they will fight for improved working conditions. People as a whole might fight through the state to constrain somewhat the operations of businesses. But everyone challenging capitalism in this way knows that their demands are limited by what a company can afford and still remain profitable, or by what a national economy can afford before the policies that are good for the population begin to be, quote, bad for the economy. That is counterproductive to attracting capital for investment in the economy. Even in the initial days of the disastrous BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010, many people were opposed to limiting the extremely dangerous deep sea drilling that caused that because they were afraid that it would cost jobs. So we're always in this jobs versus society kind of a situation. There are many ways that this economic dependency trap of capitalism functions without any pro-capitalist forces having to take any concerted action to impose it on the working class people. It is simply true that a business pushed beyond profitability will cease to exist to employ people. And on a macro scale, any policies that make investing undesirable for business will lead to some levels of unemployment. Once a society comes to have a large enough capitalist sector, the economic dependency trap begins to function passively as one of the most powerful tools favoring the interests of capitalism. In addition to passively benefiting from this reality of capitalism, pro-capitalist forces also often work actively to make use of the vulnerabilities created by the economic dependency trap through strategies such as capital strike. Just as workers can combine to refuse to supply labor in order to increase their bargaining position, owners of capital can refuse to invest in towns or in countries which promote policies that are not conducive to the interests of the capitalist ruling class. Pro-capitalist forces use capital strike or the threat of a capital strike to constrain the policies of nation states, communities, and labor unions. The economic dependency trap of capitalism needs to be taken into account when constructing our anti-capitalist strategies. Anti-capitalist organizers will be severely limited and not likely to find much support if they advocate for policies that run directly against the ability of people to maintain their standard of living. Any anti-capitalist strategies which push us right up against capitalism's economic dependency trap need to be used with caution and with an understanding of what is likely to happen. When unions organize strikes, they almost always undertake an analysis of the profitability of a company. If it looks like the demands of the workers will make the company unprofitable enough that it can't compete, the union usually decides that those demands are unreasonable. When a socialist party comes to power through elections, it almost always looks at the ways that its policies will lead to capital flight, and it tries to balance the dependencies on those forms of capital that are likely to flee against policies that entice other forms of capital to remain. When a town raises taxes, it usually looks carefully at the businesses in its environment and is careful to find ways to not scare off too many businesses. Taking these steps is prudent, and anti-capitalists should not expect those trying to improve lives within the capitalist context to do otherwise. We can build powerful anti-capitalist strategies around shrinking the power the capitalist vortex has on people's lives. One of the tools that pro-capitalist forces use is to exaggerate the power of the economic dependency trap, such that the people are convinced that pro-capitalist policies are always essential to their personal well-being, or that without them, businesses will fail. Another tool is to spread the spread of pro-capitalist forms of desiring. Anti-capitalists can strengthen their position by supporting ways to meet our needs outside the nexus of consumerism and capitalist-mediated forms of desire. To the extent that we can generate non-capitalist forms of economic activity, we are also less dependent on capitalism for meeting our basic needs. Exactly where and when capitalist practice will involve challenging states or working with states is an open question that can't be answered on a theoretical level. Instead, anti-capitalists need to be constantly mindful of the ways that states have the power to undermine anti-capitalist action through laws and through the use of force. They need to look for ways that they might use or capture state mechanisms for some anti-capitalist ends. And they need to be creative and flexible in working around the set of realities imposed by the economic dependency trap.
This is Mike, and I'm here with Ray. And we know that you rely on KBOO for a critical view on capitalism. We're free to air alternative radio because of membership support. So join me. Join Ray. Join the rest of the people that are loving KBOO today and every day of the year, and all KBOO members who support KBOO. Go to KBOO.fm, that's KBOO.fm, or call us at 877-500-5266. We've been on the air a long time. We're going to continue to be here with your support. And we've got gifts. If you give us $25 a month, that comes to $300 a year. You're going to be able to walk away with a fabulous hoodie. It's beautiful. It's warm. It's fuzzy. It's going to keep you comfortable in the months to come.
Mike, I think that's a key thing with the rainy season coming. Let me remind folks that we're looking for $400 for our goal this hour. You can help us get there. And in fact, there's some incentive for you to help us get there. Become a member now and you can be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing gets you an experience you can share with your friends. You'll win a private party gift certificate for 10 people from Eastside Distilling in Portland. We are offering a new prize every day of the week, every day of the drive, but please call 877-500-5266 now to be entered for today's exciting prize. Again, that's 877-500-5266, or you can do it online if you'd prefer, kboo.fm, and click on donate, or you can even do it on your iPhone or iPad app. Go to the start screen and hit on donate. But Mike, I think it's important that folks recognize that people like Cynthia Kaufman wouldn't be heard in Portland if it wasn't for KBOO and our commitment to independent journalism.
That's right, and I really appreciate listening to Cynthia Kaufman. What she talked about, the capitalism economic dependency trap. So within those words, there's a literal translation of what so many of us have to struggle through and deal with and try to decipher every day. And KBOO is a resource to kind of put a name and outline exactly the parameters of what it is we're dealing with in day-to-day life. We're all caught up in the capitalism economic dependency trap. And in order to get forward, we gotta get resources. 877-500-5266. If we share the wealth, you know, we can maybe create something that's more of an alternative than being dominated by this system that really seeks to kind of drain us dry. So KBOO is a community resource that allows us to build the resources, the skill, the support to provide something that's beyond what we're looking at on a day-to-day basis. Cynthia Kaufman is somebody that's put a lot of thought and time and effort into making those things clear for us in a broader sense. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, kboo.fm. If you go to the website, there's a donate button on the top right. We make it easy for you to give, and we want you to give us a call. Volunteers are waiting to answer the phone.
And Mike, with nearly 50 years on the air here in Portland, you can imagine that KBOO's archives are tremendous. Well, part of the incentive for this hour, for a $10 sustaining membership, you can get a copy of the KBOO USB drive full of exclusive audio. Think about it, a 1969 interview with Pete Seeger, a never-before-broadcast talk by the late Manning Marrabel. How about talking to Molly Ivins, or Ken Kesey, or Paul Robeson, or Daniel Berrigan? And the list is on and on. This is 4 gigabytes of incredible data and incredible audio that you can only get here at KBOO. So please take this opportunity. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266, or go online to donate. Go to kboo.fm, click on the donate button, or once again, you can get to us through your cell phone or your iPad app. Just go to the start screen and hit on donate.
$400 is what we're trying to raise right now, and we know we can get closer to that goal if you give us a call, 877-500-5266 for $25 a month. We want you to call for that $25 a month donation prize. That hoodie, that beautiful KBOO hoodie, you can walk with that if you call us today, 877-500-5266.
From the abstract ideas of what's wrong with capitalism and how it's reproduced and how to think about challenge it, I'd like to now move back to the present crisis and the present set of opportunities for those of us wanting to build a just social order. The election, of course, was terrible and means a huge setback for the things that we who support social and economic justice care about. For the climate, it might mean the difference between the possibility of building a sustainable future and getting to the changes too late to avoid catastrophe. The current period is likely to give a major stress test to our constitutional and electoral systems, and those systems may not survive the next year's intact. And I think it's important to start with the really actually quite frightening, I'm frightened, reality that we're facing right now. But it's also possible that with a huge setback to the politics of the neoliberal consensus under which we've been living for the last 40 years, there's an opening for more progressive alternatives to gain more traction than we have dreamed possible in recent decades. One of my favorite expressions is pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. That was said by the great Italian philosopher Antonio Gramsci. He argued that it's important to take a sober and realistic look around and understand the situation you're in and not sugarcoat it and not minimize its dangers and its troubles. At the same time, though, he argued, it was important to always reevaluate any situation for opportunities that it opens up and to put most of your attention into really pursuing those opportunities. So now I want to talk for a couple minutes about what I call cosmopolitan capitalism and nativist capitalism. The election that just happened blew a hole through one of the dominant forms of common sense in the United States political culture, that a society based on free market capitalism can be friendly to people from all races, genders, and sexual orientations, that we can have a fair and just society by being both mildly multiculturalist and pro-capitalist. This cosmopolitan capitalist view has taken a beating since the crash of 2008. Cosmopolitan capitalists favor the IMF, World Bank, and Wall Street, as well as transnational trade deals such as the TPP and NAFTA that give huge amounts of power to multinational corporations. Cosmopolitan capitalists claim that everyone is welcome. Gay rights, feminism, and anti-racism are fine as long as those things mean that everyone is welcome to compete in the capitalist market. The rich will be asked to provide for a social safety net, and progress towards social justice can be made, but the power of multinational capital and finance capital will not be challenged in any serious way. Cosmopolitan capitalists open space for social justice, but not for economic justice. The parts of the ruling class that supported that view have been running up against some walls in terms of public support ever since the crash of 2008. At that time, the sheer devastation that the crash caused in people's lives made people take stock and wonder if the system was meeting their needs. And watching as the system aided the 1% while allowing the rest of us to lose our homes and see our communities devastated created a blow against that dominant common sense. That situation made a lie out of the claim made by cosmopolitan capitalists that if we focus on challenging discrimination in our social systems while simultaneously enabling transnational capitalism to have its way most of the time, we will all do fine. Cosmopolitan capitalism didn't just take a beating in the United States. We can see the Arab Spring as a revolt against the power of the dictatorships in the Middle East, but also as a revolt against an economic system that was not delivering a viable future for millions of young people. And as those revolts were squashed, the only response that seemed to have legs for many people was a retreat into forms of fundamentalism that offered at least the possibility of cultural pride and a sense of belonging. In Europe, there's been a deep undermining of support for the mainstream social democratic and moderately conservative political parties that have largely done the bidding of transnational elites. Many people have abandoned those parties and begun to vote for newer parties. Watching the banks in the European Union bring Greece to its knees in 2015 because of its inability to pay debts that were taken out by corrupt Greek elites at the behest of transnational banks helped make many Europeans see that the system was rigged against the people. While many people have begun to support parties of the left, others have moved to support the claims of community and belonging offered by right-wing nativist parties. The part of capital that holds this cosmopolitan view can be forward-looking, rational, multicultural, liberal, supportive of the rule of law, and open to forms of regulation that stabilize the system. And sometimes it's willing to grant concessions to the working class. The cosmopolitan capitalists have tended to be open to the possibility of moving from a fossil fuel-based capitalism to a green-based system. The New Deal consensus in the United States was built on an accord between the working class and the capitalists, according to which if the working class got enough financial well-being and stability, the capitalists could continue to profit from their labor. In recent years, those cosmopolitan capitalist coalitions have largely lost their ability to win elections, in part because those at the top of the economic and political systems got too greedy, and they didn't share enough with the rest of us to make them like them and vote for them. They've been caught in the contradiction of trying to build popular support at a time when their funders and finance capital have insisted on a brutal economic squeezing of the working class. Another way to understand the inability of cosmopolitan capitalism to maintain its hegemony is that it was out-organized by the more right-wing side of the capitalist ruling class, the one that is that says that there's never enough for the wealthy and damn the New Deal Accord. That fraction of capital has had a different strategy for building support for an economic system that no one but the 1% would ever vote for if they really understood what was at stake and if they had other options. And that is nativist capitalism. So that alternative hegemonic worldview, nativist capitalism, won the presidency and keeps winning federal and state seats for Republicans. It's been supported by a number of unbelievably well-funded think tanks, such as the Heritage Foundation, lobbying groups such as the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, funders such as the Koch brothers, and multinational corporations such as ExxonMobil. Together, these forces have gerrymandered congressional districts, spent millions sowing doubt about climate change, worked hard to disenfranchise people who were likely to vote against them through mechanisms such as mass incarceration and voter ID laws. They've worked hard to undermine regulations that force companies to do things in ways that serve public interest, and they've fought to privatize everything from public education to our water, to Medicare and Social Security, and they've made sure that the tax system favors the 1%. They built public support for the set of policies that are the interest of a very few people by building a common sense based on racism, nativism, and sexism. The coalition that won this election got a lot of energy from a sense of aggrieved entitlement on the part of white Americans who have felt displaced. Many white Americans have been taught a version of U.S. history and a vision of U.S. culture that says that they are the normal, regular Americans who deserve material comfort and stability and security. A lot of Trump voters come from rural towns that have been devastated by the loss of family farms in the 1980s, by the loss of manufacturing jobs, by the foreclosure crisis. Many of those voters were not poor, but they did experience a real cultural loss as their communities became devastated. And it became easy for those people to blame a loss of a sense of community, stability, and a future on the multiculturalism that has risen in this past period. That politics of blame and resentment was fueled by millions of dollars invested in helping people see the world that way. This fraction of capital, the nativist capitalist, doesn't offer a functioning welfare state to get support from large numbers of people. Instead, it gains support by feeding people's fears and resentments and their sense of having been displaced culturally. Cosmopolitan capitalism doesn't speak to a lot of us because we know its claims to free market capitalism that it's a lie. It might be possible for a new labor capital accord to be built that gives enough to the working class that some working class people would vote for capital and have things be stabilized that way. But right now, those holding the reins of power are not offering enough to make that offer believable. In the face of the crisis of cosmopolitan capitalism, our job, those of us who are more progressive and on the left, needs to be to fight clearly and openly for economic and social justice. And a part of that fight has to involve developing and propagating our alternative visions of the society we want to build. So now I'm going to dig more into that. Now is not a time for us to retreat or to be moderate. Rather, it is a time to move forward and fill the void left by the implosion of the cosmopolitan capitalists and capture that very real sense of grievance and displacement that people feel at the present moment. Not the racist and nativist part of it, but the part that's genuine and that it's about people feeling a sense of a loss for their future. We know from Bernie Sanders' run for president that our ideas have much longer legs than in the U.S. than most of us ever dreamed imaginable. Many people in this country resonate to the idea that the system is rigged, that the rich are getting richer off of our hard work, and we need to embrace that view because it is true and also because it will help build support for the policies and the projects that we support. We need to put our analysis out there that there is enough in this world for everyone to live happy and comfortable lives, that a sustainable economy is possible and can work for everyone. That we need to take the reins of power from the 1%, and that we need to invest in our communities. Building support for our vision of economic and social justice requires that we promote a vision of an alternative society, and also that we promote policies that makes people's lives better in the short term. We need to be able to explain how it is that as we build new economies, or what are called solidarity economies, we will not run afoul of the economic dependency trap of capitalism that I talked about earlier. Okay. Ever since the Reagan Revolution of the 1980s, a set of beliefs has spread that is hostile to our civic culture. In earlier times, there was a strong belief that the government's important role in providing social goods, and in a sense, the citizens had an obligation to pay attention to our common interests and to be informed about the actions of government and the credibility and virtue of politicians. The drumbeat of the right that government is a waste of money, that things are done best when they're left to the market, and that taxes are simply a ripoff of our private wealth, has left the public with no real understanding of a healthy relationship to the processes of governmental action. In our highly degraded democracy, people are trained into the belief that government is supposed to serve their needs without their participation in helping government function well, by voting thoughtfully and by fighting to hold elected officials accountable. Instead, many people sit back and expect their needs to be met, and they rant against the system if it doesn't meet their needs. They function as consumers who want to be served, rather than as citizens who need to be engaged. We need to engage in practices that develop people's belief that by working together we build the social fabric. When we talk together about issues and try to understand them, we can see that solutions to our social problems are at hand, but that they require concerted, collaborative work to achieve. This is a good time to rebuild our civic culture and to engage in local forms of action that help people see themselves as parts of a community that are mutually interdependent, and to break out of the extreme individualism that has developed as a part of the neoliberal capitalist culture that became descendant over the past 40 years. Whereas 20 years ago I felt at a loss to see what kinds of work needed to be done to build a better world, now I see so many possibilities that I find myself totally overwhelmed. I know that many of you are already engaged in that work, and I want to applaud you in that work and encourage you to take pride in your accomplishments and to see yourselves as part of a team of millions around the world doing different parts of that work to build a better world. I want to ask you to not be discouraged by a feeling that you're not doing all of it, or to be negative to those who choose to pitch in a different part of the social fabric to repair than the one you've chosen to work on. And for those of you just beginning to get engaged, which I think people, millions of people all over this country kind of woke up and got off their couch in a way that I find really exciting, I would encourage you to pick the sort of action that feeds your soul the most and not to worry too much about whether or not it's the ultimate answer. When we build power, we also build community. And those communities need to have a deep and compelling vision of the world and of our way forward. This is a time that will take all of our efforts and a lot of vision and a lot of explaining. I'm asking everyone listening to do your work, but also to spend more time explaining what we're doing to others, and to try to propagate a vision of a socially and economically and environmentally just world. As we reweave the social fabric, we should also be remaking our society's common sense, such that also we can also bring others to see the world the way we do, and to become parts of our larger team. We want to create vibrant communities, we want to build alternative sustainable economies, and we want people to vote for policies and politicians that support those visions. Thank you so much, especially for your patience.
Hi, this is Ray, and I'm here with Mike, and we're returned back to the membership, the fall membership drive for KBOO. You just heard Cynthia Kaufman refer to our highly degraded democracy. Do you think you'd hear that somewhere else? I don't think so. This is KBOO, where that kind of open dialogue and independent journalism is commonplace, and we need your help. Please become a member now and be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing gets you an experience you can share with your friends. You'll win a private party gift certificate for 10 people from Eastside Distilling in Portland. We're offering a new prize every day of the drive, so please call 877-500-5266 and help us achieve our goal of $400 in this hour. We still have time left to do that. So again, call 877-500-5266 to be entered for a chance to win, or go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Or finally, if you're using a smartphone or an iPad, go to the start screen for that app, and please just click on Donate and become a member of the KBOO community.
I was just listening to Cynthia Kaufman talk about consumers that want to be served as opposed to citizens that need to be engaged. Wow. Are you a citizen that needs to be engaged? I know I am. 877-500-5266. Another thing that she mentioned was people really looking for a way to plug in and a way to do something. And that being one end of the spectrum, and the other end of the spectrum is being so overwhelmed by the fact that there are so many different things to be done. There's lots of good work to be done, and KBOO is a resource that can provide you with context and information through our news and public affairs that can really help us look at the world we live in with clarity. 877-500-5266. $10 a month is going to get you the KBOO USB drive, an exclusive flash drive full of information, full of news and public affairs. I got one a couple of drives ago, and I still haven't made it all the way through it. That's how much information is on there. Margaret Mead, Molly Ivins, Bell Hooks, Ken Kesey at Powell's, September 1992, W.E.B. Du Bois, Daniel Berrigan, Dick Gregory, the late great Dick Gregory, Ward Churchill, Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture, Eldridge Cleaver from 1998, just packed full of content, resources, information. It's just a dynamite resource. Again, 877-500-5266.
And Mike, you made a key point there. This is KBOO Community Radio. And as I like to think of it, community is our middle name. And with that in mind, we'd like to encourage you to become a sustaining member for KBOO. And one of the really lovely gifts that we have is the KBOO hoodie. It's a bold and distinctive fashion statement, and it can be yours for sustaining membership of just $25 a month. Show the folks in your community that you're a supporter of KBOO and that you care about free and independent radio. So please, call now with your donation. 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or you can donate online. Go to kboo.fm and click on donate. But whatever, take this opportunity to show that you are a committed listener, you're a member of the community, and you want to ensure that KBOO's independent and broadly based public affairs dialogue continues well into the future. We're approaching 50 years, and we want to do 50 more. Mike, what do you think about that?
I think we can do 50 more, and I think we've done 50 with the support of people in the community, not just here in Portland, but worldwide, really. I mean, you could be anywhere on earth listening to KBOO on kboo.fm. If you go to kboo.fm, like Ray mentioned, there's a donate button on the top right of the homepage. You can donate there. If you have a telephone, you can use the KBOO mobile app and enjoy KBOO any time of day, any time of the year. And if you have a phone, you can call us at 877-500-5266.